Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan has been examining the needs in rural Alaska while visiting communities during the DNR engagement tour. The tour is focused on resource development and talking with rural residents about how best to develop the state's natural wealth without harming quality of life. What does the future look like for mining, gas and oil exploration, timber, and agriculture? What's in store for renewable resource development? We'll be talking with Commissioner Sullivan, and we'll take your calls on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender. No other port in Alaska is building a 100 rail car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, sitting in today for a vacationing Steve Heimel. And I want to welcome DNR Commissioner Dan Sullivan. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Lori. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I was thinking this morning that it's sort of like interviewing a musician that's come in off a tour, a rock tour around the state of Alaska. He's been on the DNR engagement tour.
Wow.
And I have to admit that yesterday when I was calling to confirm your presence here today, I mistakenly called the Attorney General's office first. I just can't wrap my head around that switch, I guess.
Well, at least you didn't call Mayor Sullivan's office.
No, but I did call the Attorney General's office, and as soon as they answered, I said, whoops, sorry, wrong number. You have been doing this tour around rural Alaska. It's not
right.
The first time that you've engaged in such a tour seeking input. Last year, as Attorney General, you were the chair of the Rural Action Subcabinet and visited five regions of the state. That entity was tasked with recommendations for improving life in rural Alaska. What communities have you visited on this latest tour, and what have you been hearing?
Well, first, again, thanks for the invitation. And I just want to mention to your listeners, in a lot of ways, I view the Talk of Alaska program this morning as an extension of the tour. So what we are really trying to do is just meet with stakeholders throughout the state who have a connection with DNR. So that is everybody from legislators, industry, rural community leaders, native group leaders, environmental groups, community leaders throughout the state. And it's not just been focused on rural Alaska, like it actually was when I was the head of the governor's Rural Action Subcabinet. It's really everybody that we have that has a connection with DNR. And as you can imagine, given the importance of resource development for the state's economic future, that's a pretty broad group of people. It's something that we're going to be continuing to do. It's not stopping. So as I mentioned, I really view the opportunity and the invitation to come on the show as a way to extend that tour and to hear from listeners things that they think are challenges, opportunities. If they're DNR specific, would love to hear them, good, bad, and ugly. And I will say probably the biggest thing I've learned is how much more I need to learn. I've been on the job 8 weeks, and it's a big agency affecting a lot of different interests in Alaska. And you'll probably hear today that I'm not at all adverse to saying when I get a question, hey, I don't know the answer, but we can get back to you. It's certainly with only 8 weeks on the job, I'm no expert. And I'm burning the midnight oil, though, trying to get up to speed. But I'm looking forward to this discussion.
1-800-478-8255 is the number if you're out of the Anchorage area. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, or you can email us at talk@aprn.org. So what communities have you visited? I know that the last time you and I talked, when you were just getting started, you'd been to Fairbanks and a couple other places. Where have you been, and what are people saying?
I haven't gotten out. We're still, you know, working it. But what I've been up to the North Slope, been down to Kenai. Of course, I've been to Juneau a lot, and that's a great opportunity to meet community leaders from all over the state. Of course, meeting with legislators, as I mentioned, industry representatives. I think we're hearing a lot of things. Number one is challenges, right? And I think many, many Alaskans are very familiar with the challenges. The challenge that let me just talk briefly about a few of those. The number one challenge that I think is starting to get the attention in a lot of ways that it deserves is the TAPS throughput issue. This is an issue that every single Alaskan in many ways is focused on, should be focused on, because it's such a critical issue for all of us, rural Alaskans, urban Alaskans. It is the issue that I'm going to be focused on very intently as a commissioner. And it's important to recognize the numbers. You know, we talk about, you hear this number, 6% throughput decline. But when you actually look at the numbers, hear what they are, I think as recently as 2003, we had 1 million barrels a day going through TAPS. Last year, it was 640,000, the average. And as you know, that is a vital lifeline to the state. And so that's an enormous challenge. The gas line, of course, is a challenge, and we can talk about that here. I think we've made very, very significant progress on it, but there was actually a good article or a Compass piece today by Larry Pursley that
I was going to mention that.
Talked about that, you know, this is a challenge. Anytime you have a project this large, that's something that is not going to happen overnight. The high cost of energy throughout the state, but particularly in the interior and in rural communities, is something that we need to focus on. And I'll tell you more specifically within DNR, permitting efficiencies. And one of the things that I've found is we have a backlog of over 2,300 permits in our agency. And to me, that's not acceptable. It's putting off investment. It's making investment climate difficult for Alaskan businesses to hire people. And so it's an area that I'm going to focus on quite a lot. But
is there a specific area of permitting? Is it in
mining? It's across the board. And this is something that we have great team of officials at DNR, very hardworking, but for a number of reasons, both internal inefficiencies, more land that we've actually gotten from the federal government over the last 5 years. There's a number of reasons why increased litigation costs, that this backlog has grown, and it's something that we're going to be very focused on trying to bring down, and already having good discussions with the legislature on ways to do that. But the one thing I do want to – so many of these challenges people are familiar with. But I do think it's really, really important to recognize the opportunities. And we, in many ways, are a state that is so blessed with opportunities, particularly in our resource development area, that put us in a position that I think most other states and indeed most other countries would be envious. And let me just mention a few. The North Slope Basin, hydrocarbon basin, remains a world-class energy basin by any measure. In 2008, the U.S. Geological Survey did a very, very comprehensive survey of the global Arctic. In the Alaska Arctic, they estimated approximately 40 billion barrels of recoverable oil, 236 trillion cubic feet of gas, and that doesn't even include heavy oil, shale oil. So this is a critical issue because it does influence the policy debate. If we're viewed as a basin that's dry, washed up, hey, there's no future left up there because we're out of the hydrocarbons that have fueled this economy. Policy choices might be a bit different, but if we can continue our resource development activities because we still have such a giant storehouse of resources and minerals, then the policy choices, I think, are different. And so it's not just oil and gas, it's minerals. I had my staff at DNR take a look at different minerals and estimate how we would compare to other countries. Zinc, lead, copper, gold, silver, coal, every category that they looked at, we were top 10 in the world. So if Alaska were a country, we would be top 10 in terms of estimated mineral reserves. And that doesn't include timber. It doesn't include renewables, in which we certainly have a tremendous promise. And hard to estimate, but we think, and the governor's talked about it, and his budget certainly reflects this. We have an enormous storehouse, we believe, of rare earth elements that are in very, very desperate need. So from a position of promise and innovation that's happening, new players that are coming to Alaska, and it's very important to try and continue, we I think, have the – we certainly have challenges, but we certainly have the ability and the means and the resources to address these over the long term. And I think that that's something that's also come out on this tour and from what I've been hearing from people. And then –
I want to ask you one thing,
okay?
Because I'd kind of like to take this in segments. You've
sure.
mentioned a lot of areas: oil, gas, rare earth minerals, and there's some other areas as well. But let's talk about the oil. You mentioned
sure.
Larry Persily's Compass piece today. His in the paper. He's a federal pipeline gas line coordinator, and he was talking about the fact that by the end of the decade, we're going to be looking at a TAPS line that's three quarters empty.
Right.
Seeing the glass three quarters empty instead of three quarters full. How, and you're talking about all of the stores that are still there on the North
yeah.
Slope. How do we get this going? Why are we looking at this pipeline getting to, and I'm not sure what the throughput level is that we get into a situation where it becomes, someone said it could be an 800-mile candle if we don't
yeah.
have enough oil going through there. It's going to, we'll have problems with the wax solidifying in the line. Why are we facing this
right.
three-quarters empty situation?
Well, look, I said I thought it was a good piece. I didn't necessarily agree with everything that Larry put in his piece this morning. And I don't think that three-quarters empty scenario that he paints at the end of the decade has to be our future. It doesn't have to be our future. And so the critical thing, and I mentioned opportunities, I mentioned challenges that we're hearing with regard to what's coming out of this engagement tour. And we have had meetings literally with hundreds of people. But the third key element that we're that is clear to me is the issue of partnership, and I know that's a term that's thrown about a lot. But the key to, in my view, to directly answer your question of how we turn that around is the idea of partnership, and because the TAPS is not only a critical infrastructure. Our energy infrastructure for Alaska, but it's critical for the United States. And we still are about 12-15% of U.S. domestic oil production, down from over 25% at its peak. So the way to get there, in my view, to turn that TAP throughput decline around is through partnership. And let me kind of dig into a little bit of what I mean by that. Certainly, I think that there are areas where the state can and is focused on trying to create an environment on state lands on the North Slope that will encourage increased investment, increased employment, and increased throughput. There are a number of tools. The governor has put forward a tax reform bill that we believe will help achieve that. And that's, you know, being debated now in the legislature. But the key issue there is how we improve the competitiveness and the investment environment in the state. DNR is also, we are looking at a number of areas and tools that we have at our disposal, whether it's royalty relief, whether it's permitting efficiencies, whether working with DOT, it's infrastructure. You see also in the governor's budget about the road to Umiad and other infrastructure pieces. So there's a lot that we're focused on from the state's perspective. But I do want to mention something on the issue of partnership that's critical. And it's the one element you get a sense among the among different stakeholders that there's a lot of interest in the state on the issue of partnership. And I know to some people this sounds rhetorical and somewhat political, but the lack of a sense of partnership from the federal government side with regard to resource development in the state, with regard to oil development in the state, is something that's very disturbing, and it's going to make turning around the throughput challenge all the more challenging if we are unable to access and develop, whether it's NPRA, whether it's the OCS, whether it's ANWR. And I think, and I can get into each specific example, but it's not just rhetoric. What we have seen is that we have a federal administration that's turned from the important issue of environmental protection, which we certainly agree with and certainly are focused on in Alaska, to proactively shutting down resource development on the North Slope where there's enormous potential. And that's been a real problem. And again, I can go into the very, very specifics, and it's something we're going to redouble our efforts to try and convince the federal government of the importance of development of NPRA, development of the OCS, development of ANWR, not only for Alaska, but it's also in the country's energy security, national security, foreign policy interests. And we're going to redouble our efforts to convince them of how that's in the state's interest, but in the country's interest. And if we get that partnership, then I don't think the future has to be three quarters of the taps empty. You know, it could be a lot brighter, and that's something that's probably going to be my principal focus as a DNR commissioner.
You're tuned to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, hosting today's program. Steve Heimel is away, and you can join our conversation. The DNR commissioner, Dan Sullivan, is our guest today. We're talking about resource development and the DNR's engagement tour around the state. 1-800-478-8255. Or 1-800-478-TALK is the number outside of the Anchorage area. If you're in Anchorage, 550-8422. We're going to take a call now.
Okay.
And our first caller is in Chickaloon. Jed is on the line, and I guess he has a question about the Wishbone Hill Mine. Jed, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. What's your question?
Hi, Dan. I live in Chickaloon in the Matanuska Valley, and I realize that the valley is being looked at as a whole coal district right now, and there's a lot of focus here. The Wishbone Hill Mine looks like it's going to be operational soon in the future, and I see that expanding into the Chickaloon area where I live, and I'm curious if you can tell me in feet how close you can permit mining to people's residential homes, because there are a lot of residents living very close to these mines, and that seems to have changed over the last 10, 20 years. And that's my question. Thanks.
Sure, Jed. Thanks for the call. And like I said at the outset, when I don't know the exact answer, I'll let you know. I don't know the answer specifically to your question, but what I will tell you is that I've had discussions about the projects that you're talking about and the issue that you're talking about. And again, that's why I think what I've been trying to do over the last 8 weeks is, for me, important to get a better understanding of some of the issues. And so that question and that issue, you're certainly not the first person to ask it. And I think it's a very legitimate question, which is, hey, we need to, the DNR agency, it's actually established in the Alaska Constitution is, or not the agency itself, but the importance of developing our resources for the maximum benefit of Alaskans in the public interest is embedded in the Alaska Constitution. But you raise the question of, okay, if we're going to go that route, how closely, particularly on a large-scale resource development project like a coal project, how closely should that be to residential areas? And I think as the population of the valley has grown significantly over the last several years, that becomes a very important question, and it's certainly a question as the permitting process moves forward that we're going to be looking at hard and, wanting to have public input on.
Well, let's take another call. Harry Crawford in Anchorage is on the line, and we have some other callers that also have mine questions, and we'll get to those as well. But let's talk to Mr. Crawford about the Red Dog Road.
And that is one of the three issues that I'd like to bring up. Congratulations on your new job, Dan.
Thank you, Harry.
One of the things I think that we could do the quickest right now is to either extend the Red Dog Mine Road or put in a railroad to access the Ambler Mining District for the Bornite deposit and the Arctic deposit and a number of other deposits. It would become economic if the state would step forward like they did with the Red Dog Mine Road help to further those projects along. And the other is, what's your thoughts on keeping the heat on Point Thompson, which I believe is taking back Point Thompson was really what has furthered the whole process and gotten Exxon into the mix here, as far as getting a gas line, getting our gas liquids into the marketplace. And third, the same thing that I've asked you each and every time that we've met is the whole unfinished business of in your old job with the mid-level criminals and all that worked for Vico and some former politicians and politicians that were involved in the scandals back during the Murkowski administration. And what are we going to do about those folks that the state never had any deal with, that only the federal government had a deal with Bill Allen and Rick Smith to not prosecute any of those other mid-level people at Vico?
Wow, that's a wide range of issues there. I'm glad that Mr. Crawford brought up the issue of Point Thompson, because that's something that I wanted to ask about as well. I don't know how you want to take these, but
I'll
ahead and take a stab at it.
Yeah, sure. No, thanks. Thanks for your questions, Harry. Look, on the Ambler Mining District, I think the question itself raises a very important point, which is the interrelation between infrastructure development and resource development within the state. And a lot of our minerals, a lot of our resources are in places that don't necessarily have infrastructure access or energy access. And I think it's an important issue that as we're looking at resource development to try to coordinate in a strategic manner. And I'll tell you that the governor's very focused on this. He is already having smaller meetings with some of his different commissioners who work on these things. So he's very interested in, for example, myself, Larry Hardick, Mark Lucan, the Commissioner of Transportation, meeting regularly, sometimes with the governor, sometimes not with the governor, on just that kind of strategic coordination, because resource development is not just a DNR issue. It's a fish and game issue. It's a DEC issue. It's a Department of Transportation issue. It's an issue with the feds. So we're trying to do that, and you know, we're getting direction directly from the top with the governor. I will tell you, if you look in his budget, it is focused on not only a road to Umiak, but also laying the groundwork for a transportation corridor. Right now, I believe, a road, and I can get back to the specifics, not a railroad, to the Ambler Mining District. So it's something that's actually laid out as a priority in the governor's budget. On Point Thompson, you know, we've had two world-class wells drilled. That's a world-class resource, but it's also a challenge resource given the significant pressures there with regard to that gas reservoir. But I think the critical issue is that's a resource that we want to see brought online. We don't want to see warehoused. And we've made, the operator up there, Exxon, I think has made significant progress in terms of what it's drilled up there already. And I will tell you, as the Attorney General, I was point person on the settlement negotiations for Point Thompson, and we've made significant progress. We're not there yet. We are optimistic that we will have a settlement that's in the state's interest. And as you know, Harry, sometimes those things can take a long time, and we've put a lot of effort into it, and we're continuing to put a lot of effort into it. And
what do you think that will look like? Is it going to be a settlement in that they continue development there? Is it a settlement where the leases come back?
Well, I don't want to get too far into it because, you know, we certainly want a settlement that focuses on development. And the reason I don't want to get too far into it is because this is both settlement discussions but also litigation. You know, we had asked for a interlocutory appeal to the Alaska Supreme Court, which was accepted, and we actually agreed with the Exxon and the other working interest owners to put a stay on that as we worked through the settlement, and that's where we currently are. So it's both involved in litigation but also settlement discussions, and it's a very important issue, but it's an issue that you know, we'll get there when we believe the state's interests are reflected in a settlement agreement. And so, but certainly it'll have embedded in it, if we get to a successful settlement, a development path. And then on the third issue, I'm really, particularly now that I'm not even the AG anymore, I'd rather, you know, I think I'm going to pass on a discussion of issues that are now in the...
Sounds like a question for Mr. Burns.
It does.
Yes.
It is, actually. So,
well, we'll take another call quickly. We'll have to be going to a break soon, but we're going to take another call, and I think this is line 4, I think. Close enough. Jared is in Healy, and he has a question about natural gas in Healy. Hi, Jared.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to bring up that the previous DNR commissioner approved coal bed methane and other gas drilling in the Healy Basin, and this includes residential areas like the subdivision where I live. And I wasn't around 5 or so years ago when the state was taking comments on this, but I'm definitely concerned about the potential impacts of especially hydraulic fracturing, the process they use to pump the gas out. And I've learned that it can be very polluting and has been banned in a number of places. The hydraulic fracturing has been banned in a number of places around the U.S. And I believe it's being studied by the EPA because of pollution concerns. So I'm kind of concerned about my health and the water in my neighborhood and also the investment that I've made in my home in this community. So I was wondering if you're aware or concerned about the pollution from coal bed methane and hydraulic fracturing. And I also want to bring up that there's hundreds of thousands of acres in the Healy Basin area that's allowed, is being permitted for gas exploration. So I'm wondering if, given that large area, if it needs to be allowed right in residential areas like my neighborhood.
Well, Jared, I, you know, we've been following the issue of shale gas in the lower 48 rather closely, and you know, the EPA, I think, originally came out with my understanding in their studies in the lower 48 came out with a finding that there were not significant risks, and but you're correct to point out that I know that certain cities, I believe, and certain regions in the Pennsylvania, New York area have moved to ban shale gas operations because of the concern of the water supply. I think a more broad theme is that we certainly think that it's important for our ability to responsibly develop resources to both do it in a way that promotes the economic future of Alaska, and this is a critical element of our economic future, developing our resources. But we also believe that it's important to do it in a way that is environmentally responsible and certainly safe for the residents of our state. I think the state has a very good history of being able to do both, protecting its environment, protecting its citizens, and developing its resources, and that's going to be the area in which we continue our focus.
1-800-478-8255 is the number outside of Anchorage, 1-800-478-TALK. If you are in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take more calls. And I have a lot of questions that I haven't gotten to yet about coastal management and other areas that I'd like to discuss as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com. And by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com.
Indian Trust Land amak IIM account amak binkhlutun hwallu gingwvakhlutun Indian Trust agun nunnautan khlam hwalla account amak binkhlam biugwvd aging yumautan illinik $3.4 billion settlement am agukhtog yugwvd alngamak settlement am kanginagutinik biunakhkochivnik khanakhtstarvikun website amun indiantrust.com amun biumautan hwalltuklorlugu 1-800-961-6109.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and my guest today is Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan. We're talking about resource development in the state, and I guess because we've got a few callers that would like to ask questions, we'll go back to that and take some of the calls that we've got here. We've got Heather in Palmer that's wanting to talk about coal mine close to home. I think this is an issue that's on a lot of folks' minds in the valley, is the concern over this mining. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Thank you for letting us talk today. Hello, sure. Dan.
Hi, Heather.
I took my son to his parent-teacher conference yesterday and realized I can actually see Wishbone Hill from his school. It's less than 5 miles away, and it was a very windy day. I'm just extremely concerned for the health of the community. I'm part of a coalition with over 500 members, and we're all very concerned about the health impacts and what will happen to our water, since nearly 3,000 homes rely on private wells in the groundwater near this mine, and there's over 14,000 people within a few miles. So I'm really, really concerned about this, and I'm wondering, you know, I've heard that the leases are only for about $3 an acre a year, and since there's only private land ownership in the state of about 1%, to me it seems like, you know, a strange choice to choose to develop these resources when we only have 1% of land as private land. And I understand they're valuable, but the state doesn't appear to be making enough money off of these leases to even fund the studies to protect our health. I'm wondering what your ideas are about that, because I know you're new to this.
Well, thanks, Heather. And I think in some ways your concerns are similar to what Jed had mentioned a little bit earlier in the program. And my general answer is it's, from our perspective, it's actually very important to hear these concerns. And we've been hearing a lot of them. So I appreciate your call and your willingness to discuss them and mention them on this show. And I can just tell you that what I had mentioned earlier, the importance of resource development is critical to the future of the state, but it also needs to be done in a way that's not jeopardizing the health of our residents. And the issue of how close a major resource development project should be to a residential area, I think, is a very important one and something that we're going to give a lot of attention to. So, and what that means, whether it's water, continuing to have safe drinking water, you know, these permitting issues with regard to EISs and other things are looked at by several different agencies that have a different focus. And the issue on safety is, particularly to the health of the residents nearby, is something that I know we'll be giving a lot of attention to.
It seems to me that the statute, the part of the Constitution that says for the maximum benefit of all Alaskans can be interpreted to mean benefit is also protection. It's not just extraction and full-scale development. It also must encompass protections for people's quality of life. That, to me, seems like part of that interpretation. Does that seem...
Yeah, actually, I think sometimes it's important, and when I've been testifying a lot in front of the legislature, and I always start out by reading Article 8, Section 1 of the Constitution, which in part states, quote, "It is the policy of the state to encourage the settlement of its land and the development of its resources by making them available for maximum use consistent with the public interest." And, of course, it's a pretty broad statement, but it's also somewhat unique in terms of state constitutions in that it states very clearly that the founding fathers, the delegates who wrote the Alaska Constitution, saw that as critical. But the issue of public interest clearly, I think, also encompasses the issue of the safety and health of the residents of the state.
1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK is the number if you're outside of Anchorage. 550-8422 is the number in the Anchorage area. DNR Commissioner Dan Sullivan is my guest today on Talk of Alaska. We have an email from Dan in Haines, and he's asking, can we push forward with off-the-shelf proven energy production from our volcanoes along the coast of the state? Geothermal energy has been looked at by potential energy partners from Iceland and would produce enough electricity to power well beyond Alaska's needs, including transportation. And he says, it seems like pushing corporate oil and mineral development is propagating the expenses felt in rural parts of the state. Can the state develop these potentially endless sources of energy and step into the lead of the USA's production of ultra-low emissions energy? What's on the front for geothermal?
Well, I think Dan's question is a very good one, because it raises a broader issue of what the opportunities that we have on our renewable resources. I mentioned early on the minerals and hydrocarbons that we have and that the state is blessed with and can be a key component of our economic future. But that also includes renewables, and, you know, you've seen the governor is very focused on particularly the Susitna Dam in his budget, and that's that would be an enormous renewable resource. Dan's question is a very important one. There's been a lot of focus on Mount Spur, and I've met with some interests, some groups and companies that have technology that look quite interesting in terms of the ability to develop that geothermal resource. And what I think also, and his email points to this, what I think is important about renewables is that they can provide the state with clean energy that can help us power our own energy needs, both, for example, in the Cook Inlet region, but also in rural Alaska. And having affordable sources of energy will be very important in terms of being able to develop other industries. So the renewable focus, I think, is an important one. It's something that is reflected already in the governor's budget. And there's a lot of activity in this area. You see in Southeast, the hydro power that they already use is very, very significant. And it's something we're going to continue to focus on. But it can have a ripple effect on other industry, value-added industry, bringing down the cost of energy in some of the rural areas that I think is promising to develop other economic opportunities.
We're going to go to another caller. Roberta in Homer wants to talk about hydrocarbon use. Roberta, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad to hear you talk about the renewables, because that's one of my dreams, and one of my dreams is green. And the resource development you were talking about earlier all included environmental degradation and destruction. And just hearing you talk about the renewable gives me hope. However, the things you'd been talking about earlier were all hydrocarbon fuels and archaic mining practices. And I think that the state and the big corporation wants to stay in what it seems to me an obsolete era, because it's what they know and it's easy and they don't want to change. And I know change is hard, but we've got to have respect for all living entities. It's not just humans who are live here, and a harmony and a balance between it all. And I just would love to hear more talk about the big picture and the leadership. And I'd like to be seeing, instead of subsidizing oil companies and mining companies, subsidizing renewables. And I want the conversation. So far, it's been hydrocarbon and mining, and I, except for the renewable you just mentioned. And I'm just wanting to see how we can get a balance where the conversation would be at least 50-50. That yes, we still have to use these hydrocarbons, but they are so polluting. We have to face that, and we have to change the way we're doing business. And I'm just wondering how we can get to that balance. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Roberta, for your question and your comments there. And that sort of fits in with this email that we have from Nancy in Anchorage, who is saying, as a longtime Alaskan, she supports resource development to provide jobs and state revenue. However, it's clear that resource development is not the only way our lands can provide cash value to our state. Some state lands through conservation make millions in tourism dollars. And so she's asking, will the DNR under your administration openly recognize and embrace the long-term cash value of lands that are conserved as well as those that are developed? And so it seems like these two sort of segue well together.
Sure.
What I know that the state has goals of so much renewable energy
right.
in the years to come. So how do these things come together in balance?
Well, I think and I appreciate Roberta's comments and Nancy's comments or her email. The one thing, I don't necessarily believe it's an either-or choice, that it's develop our resources or preserve our environment and the safety and well-being of our citizens. I don't think it's an either-or choice. As a matter of fact, you know, going back to the Constitution, I think it's from a state official's perspective, it's the duty to do both. And I think we can do both. I mean, in some ways, we're a state, as I mentioned at the outset, that has the opportunity and endowment to do both. And I think if you look at what's reflected in the governor's budget, both with regard to, you know, I mentioned Susitna, but the funding with regard to the Alaska Energy Authority. One of the things that I saw quite a lot when I was, particularly as the Attorney General in different parts of rural Alaska, is the innovation that's going on with regard to renewable resources all over the state. So I think that what we need to do is look at developing a mix of a broad array of resources within the state. And, you know, the challenge on renewables is we certainly want that energy to help feed our energy needs. But if there was a way to export that, because we have such a large blessing of renewable resources to other areas, that would also be something that holds a lot of promise. It's just also in many ways difficult. But with regard to, I certainly agree that we need to look at diversifying the economy. Is Nancy's point about the
conserving lands?
Yeah, conserving land. You know, DNR oversees the state parks, and certainly one of the things that we want to do with regard to our state parks is make them the pride of all Alaskans. And we have a new park director, Ben Ellis, who's doing a great job bringing a lot of creativity and energy to that position. And Nancy's right. I think, I don't have the exact number, but I think we had close to 5 million visitors to our state parks last year, the vast majority of whom were Alaskans. So it's both an economic benefit and a benefit to Alaskans in their enjoyment of our state. So I don't, but going back to the broader point, I don't think it's an either or choice. I don't think it's either, you know, preservation or resource development. I think that we can do both. And certainly I think the governor's budget reflects the importance of hydrocarbons that continue to exist in the state. And that's something I'm going to be focused on, particularly the TAPS throughput and gas line. But the renewables is a very big part of his budget, and it's certainly a reflection of how the Parnell administration views the importance of that element of our energy endowment.
Well, let's stay on the hydrocarbon issue for a moment. we have an email from Elston in Anchorage who wants to know if there is a public benefits determination made by the department for legislation such as the reduction of oil taxes, and if not, why? And that sort of fits in with my question about changing the tax structure. Companies are always saying they want fiscal certainty going out a ways, and we're seeing some lawmakers are attacking AGEA, and there's other movements in the legislature and by the governor to change the oil tax structure. What's the level of concern about having that stability that the companies are saying they need, and concern over, well, if we're switching the tax structure every couple of years, will that scare off companies that are thinking about developing? And this question from Elston about a public benefits determination, is that something that's in the
mix?
Yeah,
I guess I'm not exactly sure what Elston's question's getting at in terms of public benefits to the, is it to the tax reform?
It's a very short statement. If he's wondering if there is a public benefits determination made by the department for legislation such as the reduction of oil taxes, and if not, why not?
Okay, we can get back to that. I mean, I can take his email and try and get back to him. I'm not exactly clear what the question's getting at.
Well, we'll have to connect the two of you, and maybe you can figure out.
I told you there'd
that.
Be questions that I just don't know the answer to, and
that's,
I certainly.
Right.
But we can get back to Elston on that.
That's right.
But, you know, the broader issue, you know, the governor's tax reform is focused on the issue of a competitive environment here and increased private sector investment, job growth, and the broader issue that I talked about earlier, which is the throughput issue with regard to taps. And that's the focus. And I do think that the issue of stability in our fiscal regime is something that the industry raises. I think in many ways it's a legitimate issue, but it's also legitimate for the legislature and the governor's office to assess and try to evaluate where we are and to do what they believe is in the public interest. So there's a balance that needs to occur, and I think everybody's cognizant of trying to strike the right balance. And but when we believe that from a policy perspective there needs to be changes, certainly the prerogative of state officials, governors, legislators to work towards that change.
1-800-478-8255 or 550-8422 is the number to call. Our guest today is DNR Commissioner Dan Sullivan. We've got some calls to try to plow through in the last 10 minutes of the show, and we'll do that after we take a short break when Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. One answer to our state's declining oil production, Port McKenzie Rail Project. The link from the Alaska Railroad to a deepwater port will bring billions in mineral production and thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska Susitna Borough.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, filling in for a vacationing Steve Heimel. And let's take another call. We've got Keith in Anchorage, and I'm not sure what his question is. It's Keith in Anchorage is asking something about what are we doing to compete, but I can't see the rest of the sentence. So, Keith, you'll have to tell us what your question is. Are you there, Keith? Keith is no longer there, so I guess we'll go to another caller. Let's talk to Patrick in Anchor Point about fracking. Patrick?
Yeah, hello, Commissioner. It's a pleasure to have a few words with you. I'd like to try to make a couple of points. I recently saw a documentary film called Gasland, and it very clearly lays out what has happened to a huge number of private wells as a result of hydrofracturing, and you know we're just on the heels. The dust has settled a bit from the coal bed methane that had it going under schoolyards and so on just a few years ago. And the big change I want to make, because I believe in the founders of the Constitution. I heat with oil and wood, and I drive cars. Okay, so, but we do have dwindling oil reserves, and we do have practices that since 2005 under Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force allowed these processes to begin, and there's thousands and thousands of wells and thousands of people that can document their water destroyed from this practice. And at the same time, I've got it right in my backyard, initial exploration, so I've had no indication from the state that they understand the great threat of this particular process. The hundreds of chemicals that are used are basically proprietary and exempt from many the standard Clean Water and Clean Air Act procedures, again, from 2005 changes. So a big nod towards the renewables, because that's where we need to go. We heard in the break there, dwindling oil reserves. We like to pretend it's not happening. It is. And as the cheap oil and easy oil is gone, we do more radical and radical processes to get it. And in some cases, now we homeowners feel threatened by the prospect of the same things we use could destroy the property we live on. So I'd like to recommend the film Gasland as a way to come into that body of knowledge. Thank you.
Okay, and thanks, Patrick. And I haven't seen it, but I've actually heard about it. So I actually wouldn't mind, though, making one point on the issue, because I think it's an important one, and it goes back to a little bit of what I mentioned earlier. You know, we are seeing dwindling oil reserves, but as I mentioned, I do think that we have a We certainly, and our geologists at DNR would confirm this, and the U.S. Geological Survey would confirm this. We do have a continue to have a world-class hydrocarbon basin, and in the near and medium future, the country is going to continue to need these resources, and we have a lot of them. And I think it's important not only for the Alaska economy to develop these, but for the United States. And one point that I think is often missed, we have very stringent environmental standards on the North Slope. And when, for example, the federal government tells us, hey, we can't develop additional resources on federal lands, what that does, that doesn't, from a global environmental protection standpoint, that doesn't protect the global environment. In my view, it undermines it, because what does that do? That pushes our imports, not from Alaska, where we have very, very strong standards, but from places like Russia, places like Saudi Arabia, places like Iraq. I've been to all these countries. I can guarantee you they don't have nearly the stringent environmental standards that we have. And you saw when the taps shut down in January for 5 days, the West Coast refineries were getting their oil not from Alaska, but from Russia. And I know that Russia does not have nearly the environmental standards that we do. So by not allowing us to actually continue to explore and fill our and address our resources from Alaska, the federal government is not helping protect the environment. They're actually, in my view, undermining the environment globally, because they're pushing exploration and production to countries outside the United States that have much, much less stringent environmental practices. That's an issue that doesn't come up a lot. I think it's something that people should be aware of, because I've actually seen it.
We're just about out of time, but I wanted to encourage, we still have some callers who wanted to talk about their concerns over mining in the valley. And so I wanted to have you remind people about the comments area that you're taking as part of the engagement tour, that you have a spot on the website where you're compiling comments. Can you talk a little about
that?
Yeah,
sure. And I apologize.
Very quickly.
We can get back to you, or maybe put it out. I didn't bring the exact email, but
we can get that. We'll get that information, and we'll put it on the website with Talk of Alaska.
We're getting comments, and I'm reading them, and so
we can send people there.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Commissioner Sullivan, for being here. We didn't get to all the questions that I had, but we'll have to have you come back at some point and join us again on Talk of Alaska. Today we had
Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, where every year Alaska Natives from all corners of the state graduate and become engineers, scientists, and physicians. Students can get involved as early as middle school, then move to the University of Alaska Anchorage, Fairbanks, or Southeast in a program based on skill building, collaboration, and community. Learn more at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. If you are an individual owner of Indian Trust land, an IIM account holder, or heir to an Indian Trust landowner or account holder, you may be eligible to receive money from a $3.4 billion federal settlement. To get a detailed written notice about the settlement that explains your legal rights, you may visit IndianTrust.com or call 1-800-961-6109. This message is sponsored by the Native American Trust. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.